Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome back to another episode of PWT Talks NXT. I am your host for this evening, Nate Lindberg. You can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I write the NXT hits and misses, which I do have up on pwtorch.com for you guys to check out. If you'd like to do so, please do. I'd appreciate it. And we're here to talk NXT 2.0 for June 28th, 2022, as we get ramped up for the Great American Bash. The card's pretty much fleshed out as we come into the show next Tuesday for the Great American Bash. Our main event segment tonight was a face-to-face with Cameron Grimes and his with Bron Breakker and his opponent, Cameron Grimes, in which a little bit of a kerfuffle happened at the end, which ended up seeing the top rope get snapped off the turnbuckle and Bron Breakker selling a shoulder injury, with the story kind of progressing as he will not be 100% going into Great American Bash, kind of shifting the odds more in the favor of Cameron Grimes, technically, even though I don't think Cameron Grimes is going to get the W as much as I would like to see that happen. However, here with me tonight is somebody that will be co-hosting Wrestling Night in America with me this Sunday night after Money in the Bank. So check that out on the PW Torch Daily Cast feed. And that is our usual idiot here, Bruce Hazelwood.
Thanks, Nate. I'm also coming off of being co-host for Wrestling Night in America two nights ago as we reviewed Forbidden Door. It was Kelly and myself, and Kelly is not with us tonight, but that's okay. It'll just be us two. And yeah, you can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253. And next week for the Bash, I will also be doing the live report. Or I guess the Great American Bash, I should say.
Yes, indeed. And I'll still be doing the hits and misses. And Kelly maybe will do something. Now, he did the live report tonight. I'm not going to bash on Kelly. I should, but I'm not going to. I don't know why. I'm feeling good tonight. Anyway. So on the main event segment is let me just throw to you right off the bat, Bruce. What's your take from this segment? And do you think Cameron Grimes might end up having a little bit more in his favor after this attack that broke the top turnbuckle?
So I'll start with Breakker first, now, and I'll stick with Grimes. I think there's more to talk about with Grimes. So with Breakker, for me, I think, beyond the fact that he yells way too much in his promos, I think what would really help him in the ring is if he's willing to pace up and down instead of back and forth, because he just keeps walking back towards the ropes and then forward again, the back and forth. And it just seems a bit frantic, I guess could be the word. If he kind of, Cameron Grimes, if you watch the promo tonight back, he kind of just stays in one spot, maybe moves his feet slightly, but he's able to convey a lot through his lack of motions, I guess you could say. Whereas Breakker just keeps moving around, and I'm just trying to like stay with him, and it's, yeah. So beyond yelling, I think he'll go a long ways in his promos if he could stay in the same. I understand the adrenaline's pumping, right? But if he could stay in the same spot, that would be, I think it would help his promos come over a little better, especially if his development in terms of ramping up to yelling is always so quick. Now, when it comes to Grimes, I thought as soon as he started speaking, I go, oh, are we shooting, brother? Like, because he just started bringing up getting called up and
right,
football and his dad, yada, 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 which I think signals to us that Cameron Grimes is losing and going to get called up to Raw or SmackDown here soon. So I wouldn't be surprised if he loses the match next week and then we don't see him again until Raw or SmackDown the week after SummerSlam. So, we've been saying Graham's going to be moving up for a long time, and this seems like the actual time, because if my memory serves me correctly, and it you can never rely on my memory, I think this is his first one-on-one NXT championship match the whole time he's been there. I could be wrong, but from my memory, that's what I'm thinking. So, if I'm looking at this from the Booker's perspective, he's here and he's not going to win the championship. There's obviously, if he doesn't win on next Tuesday, then there's obviously no plan for him to become a champion anytime soon. What else is he doing down here? And it's fine if you don't win and go up. I mean, if you just look at two of the most successful people on Raw and SmackDown right now, it's, well, I guess Raw, but it's Bianca Belair and Becky Lynch, and those two never won the NXT championship while they were in NXT, but their contemporaries did. So it's not a death knell by any means. And Grimes' character work plus his in-ring work is not taking a long ways. So aside from that, I just felt like this devolved too much into yelling and kind of attitude era tropes and stuff. But yeah. I'm not sure if I'm seeing things incorrectly, but I thought Breaker's shoulder did look pretty red at the end of the after the spot with the turnbuckle snapping. So maybe it was just how he was holding it, but it did look a little red to me. But that could also be my screen. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know, because I actually, like, they showed a replay of when he hit the turnbuckle, and it looked like he hit more with his chest than his arm. But who knows? I mean, I still think it's story, but. But hey, you never know. Maybe there is more to it. As far as the segment goes for me, I was, I don't want to say I was bored, but I was kind of bored. It was confusing because a lot of the stuff, as you said, Cameron Grimes kind of was like, it was almost like he was shooting. You're talking about going up to our SmackDown, talking about family, his father. And I think I don't know if he brought up Scott Steiner or not, but regardless, a lot of the things he was saying was kind of certainly like a shoot. It kind of came from like real life, real world things. And I don't know, it felt like it was trying to get sympathy on himself, because he's talking about how he's fighting from underneath, and how, if it was if Bron Breakker loses the NXT title tomorrow, he'll just get called up to Raw or SmackDown, where, Cameron Grimes has to fight for everything he does. So it kind of makes him feel like a scrappy underdog. And then Bron Breakker's response is just like, I'm going to spear you in half. And it's like, oh, you kind of just sound like a really angry bully right now. It was almost backwards for me, the way that I was taking it. You assume you want Cameron Grimes to be the heel, especially with the way things came out with, the turnbuckle breaking and that part of the segment. But it didn't come across that way on TV. So it just, I don't know, the whole thing kind of came across a little bit confusing. Bron Breakker, while his mic ability is certainly better than some on the show, which we can talk about later. I'm talking about you, Katana Chance. It's not nearly as good as Cameron Grimes, and it was blatantly obvious there tonight. Cameron Grimes was very eloquent. He said a lot of things, did not sound like he was reciting anything that was memorized or anything, though I'm sure he probably did have to memorize those lines or whatever. But it came across natural, whereas Bron Breakker, like you said, he was just kind of shouting, and his delivery – yeah, just kind of shouting nothing. Like his responses really were very thinly veined responses to the kind of huge burns Cameron Grimes kept throwing his way. Whether it was scripted that way or not, who knows? I don't know, but that's the way it came across to me. And I don't know. It didn't make me get invested in this match. It certainly gets me more invested in Cameron Grimes. I'm a huge Cameron Grimes fan, as I think we all are on this show. But as far as getting him more, kind of like heat or whatever, it was just a very confusing segment. I personally didn't really like it. I gave it a lukewarm hit in the hits and misses. It was okay. I guess it served its purpose, but I don't know, as a kind of a go home for their big show, Great American Bash, it was kind of a weak ending, though. I think the whole show on itself is kind of a weak show, but that is what we're here to discuss. It's what we're here to discuss.
Well, it's interesting you bring up Breakker and kind of not really getting anything, because earlier in the night they played a vignette of him. Well, I guess a video of him, not necessarily a vignette, and kind of his accomplishments in the ring and his skills, and there's some talking over. But what I noted was that while this was a good video, it didn't actually tell me anything more about Bron Breakker. It didn't tell me anything more about the NXT champion, right? And whereas when Grimes came up, it kind of channeled more into his his whole journey, kind of his ode to his father, and then the promo, he brought it home. Whereas the promo for Breaker, again, there was just nothing there for me, or nothing there that again, I think, grew the character of, or added layers to the character of Bron Breakker.
So I am going to cut, before we go to the phone lines, I am going to cut to an email from David Podnar, which is bringing up something that actually you brought up a little bit ago, Bruce. David Podnar says, hello, everyone. To be honest, I'm downloading and listening to the podcast, but I'm not watching much of the NXT show itself. I did see the end of the confrontation between Bron Breakker and Cameron Grimes when Bron ran into the corner. It looks like Bron went way too fast and hit his right bicep on the rope. It didn't look like it was supposed to go that way. I hope I'm wrong, but it looks like an injury. But being a Steiner, it wouldn't shock me if he still wrestled injured. Have a good week, even after this past week. Yeah, this past week was kind of the shits, wasn't it? But
still going.
Let's go USA. Dave Podnar. All right. I just kind of wanted to touch on that because you did bring it up. And if both you and David kind of picked up on that, I don't know, maybe there is something to it. I haven't seen anything, at least online yet, though if it was a real injury, I'm not sure if they would have had anything online this soon after the show ended. But, keep a look at pwtorch.com and find out if there is something to an injury. But I personally don't think that's the case. I think it was scripted that way, especially where Cameron Grimes said something along the lines of, Bron Breakker is going into Great American Bash, not 100%. I feel like if it was real, then that may have not happened. Unless Cameron Grimes is just that good where he's like, okay, let's get something out of this. But I feel like if it was real, it probably would have ended a little differently without Cameron Grimes saying that. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. I've been wrong in the past, people. I've been wrong in the past. All right. So with that said, let us go to the phone lines, and we're going to go over to Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, what do you got for us tonight?
My first question is on Brooks Jensen and Josh Briggs winning the TUK Tag Team Championships. Do you see anybody else on this roster that could possibly win a championship on that brand? And if so, who? And when do you think that might be?
That's a good question. I honestly haven't really given that much of a thought. To be honest, I didn't even know that they had won the UK championships until this show tonight. I don't typically watch NXT UK. I try to keep up with it, but somehow that slipped past me until the show tonight. I'm trying to think. I would like to probably see somebody go up there that hasn't done a whole heck of a lot recently on this show. But I'm not sure who really stands out, to kind of go and challenge for like the UK title. Bruce, as I'm racking my brain, does anything come to you?
I'm hoping they just mold these titles into the NXT tag team titles and eventually, or, I mean, I guess it's pretty deadly, and they are the former UK title holders, so there's that. It could just be something to try and put an accomplishment on the ledger of, let me say it like Kelly, Briggs Jensen and Joshua Briggs here, because I think they have hopes for them, even though I don't. And while the UK titles are pretty much out of the minds of a lot of people, it is still an accomplishment. It's still a championship. And so for me, it's more likely that they're doing that to get something on them right now because they want to have them on TV to work and grow more because they see something in them. But it's hard to do that when they're not in a program. When you make them a champion, though, they're obviously going to be in some kind of program. So, any team, I mean, aside from Pretty Deadly, I guess you could talk about the team they took it off from, which was Amir Jordan and Oliver Carter, I think. Yeah, so there's always that, but honestly, I think eventually they should just it would take merging the brands, but they should just merge the brands.
Yeah, I kind of agree, especially, I mean, I don't know what the numbers are on NXT UK, in terms of how many people are actually watching it and things like that.
I'm sure it does well in the UK.
I'm sure it does do well in the UK, but I don't know if those numbers really necessarily warrant like a separate roster, separate show. I mean, there's a ton of talent on that show that they don't get to have the eyeballs, you know, that they probably should. So I don't know. It would kind of be, in a way, be nice to merge the two, you know, kind of looking up and down the card. I mean, it's a very small roster. So it's like they could pretty easily incorporate, I mean, still, I don't know, still a handful of people, but you know, they could pretty easily incorporate these people into the NXT roster, or if there are some people, you know, that are ready to go up to, like, you know, Mako Satomura, for example, she could easily go up to the main roster, you know? So something like that. But I think, you know, the other thing too is maybe that they're trying to actually get more eyeballs on the NXT UK product by putting the tag team titles on an NXT US tag team. You know, that could certainly be as well. Because I mean, as we were just talking about, you know, we're not really sure how many people are watching NXT UK. I can't imagine it's got to be a very small fraction of, you know, the viewership that NXT is getting. So, you know, maybe promoting it a little bit on the brand here in the US is, you know, it could help put some eyeballs on the UK product. I don't know if it's necessarily going to be a huge, huge thing, but I mean, Briggs and Jensen, they're not exactly the team that's going to make me go, ooh, I need to tune into the UK. But, you know, I don't know. I do agree with you. I think that WWE sees something in Briggs and Jensen. I think I see a hell of a lot more in Briggs than I do Jensen. Briggs has a lot more charisma. He's better in the ring. He's just kind of one notch above Jensen all the way around. Like tonight, Jensen on the mic just came across as, man, for lack of a better term, he just came across as stupid. Like the way he was talking, his inflection, just everything. It just came across like he was stupid, you know?
Well, I said in our group chat that these two were obviously just trying way too hard.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But if certainly, I personally feel like Jensen was trying much harder than Briggs. Both of them were trying, like, yeah, they were over the top tonight. But Jensen really stood out to me. Brooks, I feel like if he dialed it back just a notch, like it would kind of be the perfect amount of charisma and kind of energy, if you will. I like him. I think he has an upside. I think he's got he has a potential singles career as well. We even saw him, you know, do some single stuff while Jensen was recovering from a wrist injury, and I don't think he failed at it. It wasn't great, but because it was an angle with Von Wagner that got all kinds of weird. But you know, for what they asked him to go out there and do, I don't think he failed. I think he actually, you know, pulled it off. So yeah, we'll obviously see what kind of things happen with Jensen and Briggs, but you know, we'll see if they wind up going back to the UK or if Pretty Deadly winds up taking the titles off of them and Pretty Deadly goes back to the UK. I'm sure that would be, you know, pretty cool for anybody that watches the UK product. You know, kind of almost be like akin to, like, you know, the Viking Raiders coming back down here, you know, at NXT or something. You know, while it wasn't like a huge, huge deal, it was kind of cool to see the Viking Raiders back in NXT. But yeah, Brian, what else? I'm going to give you two more tonight because we are trying to wrap up a little quick. I get to get up really early in the morning. So we're trying not to go like 2 hours tonight. So I'll give you at least two more.
Second question is on Nikita Lyons returning from the partial MCL tear. Is she the fastest person that's a wrestler to recover from this injury, like at least for a female?
Oh man, I don't know. I'm actually Googling it as we speak. So a minor tear can take from a few days to like a week and a half to heal. I don't know exactly, you know, according to the internet anyway. You know, a grade 2 tear or something can take like 2 to 4 weeks to heal. So I guess it really all depends on how badly it was torn. I do remember hearing at the time that it wasn't that severe of an injury, but it was severe enough where she needed to take time off. So, you know, maybe she was kind of in that, you know, 2 to 4 week time period and they, you know, kept her off TV a little bit longer. You know, whether to, you know, just kind of, yeah, absence makes the heart grow fonder or something like that. But I think it really all depends on just how bad the injury was. Bruce.
Yeah, I honestly have no idea. It was a partial tear, so I assumed that it wasn't as bad as it could have been. And generally, the side ones aren't as bad as the ACL, the rear ones. So, let me just say I'm glad that that was the extent of your question about her, Ryan.
Yeah, me too. We'll get to the Keita Lions eventually tonight. Heck, we're already here. Why not? So real quick, we can jump in and talk about Nikita Lyons versus Mandy Rose. This match felt like it came out of nowhere. I think I remember you and Kelly talking in our Skype chat that, or actually I think it was a Twitter chat, but that's neither here nor there. But in the chat that it was like just a graphic in the corner of the screen during the match prior to this, because like I don't remember this being announced before it really happened. But we had Mandy Rose versus Nikita Lyons in a non-title match where Toxic Attraction got involved very predictably towards the end of the match to cause a DQ win for Nikita Lyons. And they beat her down. Cora Jade and Roxanne Perez came to make the save. And for me, that kind of foreshadows the thing that we were all thinking anyway, that Nikita Lyons is the one that's going to be going for Mandy Rose's NXT Women's Championship, simply because, as we found out tonight, Cora Jade and Roxanne Perez are the number one contenders for the NXT Women's Tag Team titles. So if the three of them are teaming up against the three women that have all the gold right now in the women's division, I kind of have a feeling that's going to be the match we're going to go see. I'm not super over the moon about it. The match we saw tonight between the two of them was clunky at best. It was not either one of their best performances by a long shot. There was the one move in particular that really, really stood out to me was when Mandy Rose got Nikita Lyons down to, I think she was either on both knees, one knee, something like that, but she was on a knee, and she goes to throw a punch at Nikita Lyons' head. Nikita Lyons takes her hand, throws it up to try and catch the punch, but she very clearly did not catch the punch. Mandy Rose, stopped the punch, and then Nikita Lyons, you could see her hand fumble around a little bit to try and make it look like she had caught Mandy's closed fist. Oh, it was terrible. And there were a few other spots in there as well that stood out, but that one in particular was just bad. It's been no secret, I'm not a fan of Nikita Lyons. I don't like the gimmick, even though it is kind of a real life gimmick. I'm really not a fan of the gimmick whatsoever, simply because it does not feel like she believes herself in the gimmick. It comes across, and we've said this a thousand times, she just comes across as an Instagram model that's trying to be a rapper. And that's what comes across on TV. The gimmick doesn't work. Her in-ring ability is getting better, but it's still not main event ready, main roster ready. I don't even think it's developmental TV ready, personally. And that kind of showed tonight in this match. Mandy Rose, if with the right opponent, Mandy Rose can have a really good match. But I don't think that – well, okay, I say really good. She can have a pretty good match. Tonight with an opponent like Nikita Lyons, that really did not happen. Bruce, I know you don't want to talk about it, so talk about it.
So I missed – I guess because it was this match, I wasn't paying too much attention to it. I also was getting some other things done. But I missed that. I missed the hip toss spots that Kelly was upset about. But her German suplexes every single time are just not good. If she wanted to improve her in-ring work by a little bit, just remove the German suplexes from the arsenal and it'll be better. The one spot that stood out to me, though, that I just went, what the hell is going on here, is there was a spot where she countered Mandy Rose or made Mandy Rose miss, and then when Mandy Rose turned, instead of following up with attack, Nikita Lyons screamed and then lazily attacked her. And I just went, what's going on here? That's not what should happen. You should hit her and then scream afterwards. It just, yeah. I know you don't want either of them to lose, but Mandy Rose shouldn't need the help of Toxic Attraction to defeat Nikita Lyons. And I know it was a DQ finish here, but it's just, it's unnecessary, I guess would be the word. And the work into the injured knee angle, cool, whatever. I just don't think that, or Nikita Lyons is in a position to be a world champion. And the, I think about people who have become champions quickly, or maybe the champions who haven't had, who haven't been the best in ring. Not to say you have to be awesome in ring, you have to be passable in the ring. And, you know, even someone like the great Khali at least was better, but there's just not many champions I could think about who, let's say she does become champion, if she does become champion, who are as unrefined as she is in the ring, which makes it, I mean, the only thing it does to me is tarnish the championship, which you don't want that to happen. So, yeah, I will say as much as I, you know, am not a fan of Mandy Rose, particularly because of her in-ring work, ever since she's returned to NXT, I will say that her character and her presentation has been very good.
All right, Ryan, what is the last thing you got for us tonight?
My last question's on the Sanga Zion Quinn match. Which of these wrestlers do you think will have the best future in WWE, or do you think they'll both end up getting released in the next year?
With the rate this company is going, you never know. God, you never know. It's funny because I was, in a way, I was kind of thinking about this during the match itself. Maybe not necessarily to the exact extent you're talking about, but, you know, I was kind of thinking, like, who comes across as, like, a bigger threat, a bigger monster in the match. And I don't know. In a way, I almost want to say Sanga. And it's because I don't think he should have as good of a run as Zion Quinn, which is why I chose Sanga, because I feel like the company is going to do exactly the opposite of what I think they should do. Sanga, he's got a good presence. He's got a great look. I'm not going to lie. He looks like a complete, like, brick house. I actually really like the fact that he's kept all the, you know, bodily hair and stuff. It's not something you see on a lot of wrestlers. It's different. So I kind of like that. I like the fact that he's also switched to different attire. It's generic as all hell. It's all black, just black trunks and black, you know, protective gear. But it's better, in my opinion, I think it's better than using the attire he was wearing, which looked exactly like what Braun Strowman. Wow. I almost said Braun Breaker. Exactly what Braun Strowman was wearing. I mean, even the pants and, you know, the tank top and everything looked exactly like Braun Strowman's attire, which, you know, we've pointed out a few times on the show. So I do like the fact that he's trying something different. Even if it is a generic look, it's still a different look. And that certainly can evolve over time. Zion Quinn, I'm not sure. I don't know who Zion Quinn is yet. You know, he comes across as kind of like this
asshole.
Yeah, this jerk. I was trying to figure out like a better way of putting it, but this asshole that you just kind of want to slap in the face, but at the same time, I don't necessarily care about the character. His in-ring work isn't bad. Again, not the greatest. Again, you know, we're also down in developmental, but his in-ring work isn't bad. But I feel like his look, as well as his in-ring work, is a little bit more like what Vince is probably looking for. Granted, you know, Sanga does have that big, you know, the big size and everything. However, even during this match, they're talking about Sanga's size and trying to build him, you know, talk him up as being, you know, this 7-foot monster. But then they just kind of undercut it by then talking about Omos going into Money in the Bank. And I know you got to promote Money in the Bank, but they undercut it by saying something along the lines of, well, you know, yeah, he might be 7 feet, but Omos is 7'3" going into Money in the Bank. And I just kind of felt like it was a bit of a bad time to talk about it. It felt like it undercut Sanga as the monster that he rightfully looks like. You know, yeah. So by doing that, it's almost kind of like, all right, they have their monster. You know, so maybe they will wind up cutting Sanga if they cut one of them at all. But anyway, I've kind of rambled on along enough about this. I personally think that if it's one of the two of them, we'll have a halfway decent career. It probably will be Zion Quinn. But I'm also kind of in the camp too of the next time there's a round of cuts, it would not surprise me if I saw both of these guys' names on the round of cuts. Bruce.
So if it was me, I would be putting my stock into Sanga. I think he has more upside to him. I think there's more of a character and personality to him. And that little change, I tweeted, it's amazing how simple black trunks and gear can do for, or what it can do for a wrestler. And he saw that here with Sanga coming out with the non-Braun Strowman gear. And it just, I mean, arguably the person that drew the most money in the wrestling business, Stone Cold Steve Austin, was just plain black everything. And it worked. Not to say everyone it can work for, but because, I mean, it's also the style that the Young Lions use in New Japan, right? Just the nondescript, no identity, anything kind of thing. But it makes him, I think, look more menacing because of his size. Then again, it didn't work for Gene Snitsky either. So I'm just throwing all these examples out there to give you a range.
But it wasn't Gene Snitsky's fault.
It definitely wasn't his fault, yes. So, but when I look at the two, I think they view Zion Quinn as someone who can be another Baron Corbin on Raw or SmackDown, a larger guy who can shift in between different feuds and work as basically the gatekeeper for people moving on to mid-card and main championships. He can be in and upper card and world championship level angle sometimes, most likely in multi-person matches. But I think for them, they see him as someone who could fill that role, which, you know, might not be the most prestigious in terms of accomplishments and wins and whatnot, but it's a great way to get paid for your career and to have a sustained career in WWE. But I would put mine in Sanga and not Zion Quinn, though I do think that they have their eyes set more on Zion Quinn and the potential that he has to work how they present professional wrestling as opposed to Sanga.
All right, Ryan, we definitely appreciate it as always. Is there any follow-up that you had on the Sanga thing or anything else we talked about for that matter?
The only thing I think that might impact Sanga isn't he pretty old for an NXT superstar, I believe, and haven't checked Zion Quinn's age, but he looks like he might be a little bit younger, so maybe that's why he may have a little bit more of an upside, just because of an age difference.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. There definitely is
I mean, you could say that, but then Bobby Lashley's in his mid-40s, Brock Lesnar's in his 40s, Roman Reigns is approaching that. A lot of the people that are kind of running the business or running WWE right now are in their 40s. So, I mean, I wouldn't say it's a big issue. And with the bigger guys, at least, a lot of them are able to transition to a more power-based and more static style where they don't have to do as much moving because of their size. And so there could be more longevity here than someone like, if you're like a Roderick Strong, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And that's kind of what I was about to say. Like, you know, he's definitely got a point with age, but no, I mean, I'm right there with you. You know, with a lot of the people in the company right now around 40, pushing 40. You know, it's not nearly as, I guess, much of a death sentence, if you will, as it was, you know, 25 years ago, 30 years ago, something like that. You know, the business was also different back then too. You're a lot more banged up by that age than I think a lot of people are at this point. So, but yeah, Brian, we thank you as always, and I'm sure we will talk with you next week. So with that, let's move on. We're actually going to go back to the mailbag real quick here. I'm going to read one from JB because it's already talking about something we've already discussed. JB says, hi team, it's JB from Detroit. Why did Briggs and Jensen win the NXT UK tag titles? I feel like there are many better options, and ultimately I think this just confuses the NXT proper landscape proper. As always, love the show and go VIP. So we kind of touched on this a little bit. I mean, we don't really know, at least at this point in time, you know, why behind the scenes Briggs and Jensen went there and, you know, competed in the match for the vacant NXT UK titles. You know, we kind of speculated a bit as to why. It could be to get some more eyes on the product. It could be just to get some tag gold around Briggs and Jensen's waist without taking it off of Imperium. Imperium, Diamond Mine. Jeez. yeah, that's weird. Without taking it off of Diamond Mine, because Diamond Mine right now, they're in the middle of a bit of an implosion themselves, which I think we'll probably wind up talking about next. Diamond Mine, we have a match made right now between the Creed Brothers, the NXT champions, versus Roderick Strong, the leader of Diamond Mine, and Damon Kemp, one of the new members of Diamond Mine. So I feel like this is probably the end of Diamond Mine here. Pretty big story for NXT. Don't take the tag team titles off of them, but they still wanted to elevate Briggs and Jensen. So you put the UK titles on them. It does both of those things. It elevates, the two competitors, but it also does hopefully get some more eyeballs on the NXT UK product. Anything to add to that, Bruce?
So we've seen WWE take people from our SmackDown and put them on NXT. And we've also seen people from NXT go over to NXT UK. So I think this is just an extenuation of that, or continuation of that, I should say. I don't know why, but when I saw that they were bringing Jensen and Briggs out as the NXT UK champions, I just thought in my mind, this seems very AEW to me. With the ROH Tag Team Championships, and then you have the AAA Championships, and then you have the IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team Championships. So, I'm taking a page out of the book of AEW, which, hey, nothing in wrestling is very original. But, I wonder if this is a way to get people, because the rosters are so pared down now, not just a way to fill in that roster depth, but also to keep people programs, keep them working, keep them developing. And I think if that is the case, good for them, because they're really only doing the coconut loop. There's not many house shows they're able to do, but with sending people over, maybe just one at a time or two at a time, they are able to at least give those acts an ability to keep developing and maintaining in what is now a developmental program.
It's a damn good point. It's a damn good point. I mean, you think about, in the pre-COVID days, there were all of these NXT house shows. I mean, they'd come up to my area every once in a while. They were a nationally touring brand, and now not only are they not a touring brand because of the direction that NXT 2.0 went, but also because COVID kind of killed all of that, and then they became 2.0, the focus isn't becoming a third brand anymore. It's back to being developmental. So yeah, these people, they're not getting the reps in front of a live crowd like they used to. So I don't think it would be a bad thing to send people to send people over to the UK, like you said, one at a time, two at a time, to keep them in a program, keep them fresh, especially if they're not really doing a whole heck of a lot over here in the U.S. Great, Briggs and Jensen, obviously they are. They're on TV just about every week. That doesn't mean they have to do that every time. So with that, let's get into the whole Diamond Mine, Joe Gacy, Dyad saga. So earlier in the night, we saw Diamond Mine backstage minus Roderick Strong. Joe Gacy and the Dyad walks up to them and starts talking a little bit about how there's been some friction within Diamond Mine, and they not really sure how things are going to pan out for the faction. Diamond Mine started, I think it was one of the Creeds, I think it might have been Julius, started saying that they're Diamond Mine is as strong as ever, and they're never, never going to be. I don't exactly remember what he said, but essentially they're strong as ever. Roderick Strong walks on screen from kind of a dark corner in the room, apparently, and says the same thing. They're as strong as ever. Joe Gacy and his family, they're no match for them, and essentially challenged them to a match tonight. Six-man tag, with Roderick Strong and the Creed brothers versus Joe Gacy and the Dyad. That match came a little bit later on in the night where the Dyad, one of the Dyad members, I guess Dyad number two, I'm going to call him Dyad number two. I don't know which is which. I don't think we're supposed to know which is which, but Dyad number two got the roll up or got a roll up pin. I think it was after a powerbomb maybe on.
It was a snapshot.
Was it? Okay. And I don't remember who he pinned. Do you remember off the top of your head who it was he actually pinned?
I think he pinned Brutus.
Okay, I knew it was one of the – I thought it was one of the Crees. I couldn't remember which one. But
look at the report from the one and only Kelly Wells at Spooky Milk and SpookyMilk.games. A little free plug for you there.
As well as NXT 8 years
Kid
back.
Oh, Roddy.
Okay, it was Roddy. All right, I thought it was one of the Crees. Okay, so he pinned Roddy. Yeah, that's right. Because there was a miscommunication at the end of the match between Roderick Strong and the Creed brothers, where the Creed brothers were trying to get Roderick Strong to listen to them. I forget exactly what the situation was in the ring, but the Creed brothers were right, and they're trying to get Roderick Strong to listen to them. Roderick Strong's arrogance got the best of him, and he's like, I'm the veteran here. I'm the leader. I'm not listening to you. And it wound up with him eating the loss. This then led to Diamond Mine blowing up backstage, and Roderick Strong and Damon Kemp challenging the Creed brothers for the tag team championships at a Great American Bash, kind of signaling the end of Diamond Mine here. So with all of that kind of swirled in the equation, Bruce, what did you think of this segment? Or, well, the wrestling segment, as well as some of the backstage stuff with Diamond Mine.
So you and Vic Joseph must have read my report, 2 weeks ago now when I called them Dyad 1 and Dyad 2, because that's both of you called them tonight. And the match, okay, so my biggest issue with the match is that they pulled Twin Magic with the Dyad, only for them to immediately tag in the Twin who was, or the Dyad member who was just hurt, and then pull off a finisher like there was no issue at all. So to me, there's a little bit of psychological work they need to do there. Why, if you're going to play off that you're hurt and you made the tag and the switch because of that, just catch them off guard, then why do you tag them right immediately after to hit the finish like there's nothing going on? So there's that. The match in itself, it was more of an angle to tell the story of the Creed brothers or the Diamond Mine imploding. The backstage segment... At first when Roderick Strong came in, because he had, you know, he has his shirt off and then the Creed brothers have their straps down. I said, what is this, the NFL combine? Cause it just looked like dudes getting ready to be weighed and measured at the end, you know, at the combine.
Yep.
Just sitting there in their trunks. So, but after they made the match, I noted that when Damon Kemp walked by, the look that he gave the Creed brothers was just like, he was just sitting back there, just nodding his head. Like, yep, I'll be there. Like, yep, yep. And he just looked at them like, y'all don't know what you just got yourselves into. And when they announced the match, I was just like, you know what? Hook this straight into my veins. Because this is, for the matches that have been announced next week, you know, we have the NXT Championship match. We have the NXT North American Championship match with Hayes and Waller, which we'll get to in a bit. We have the Women's Tag Team Championship match. This Men's Tag Team Championship match is probably my pick to be the match of the night next Tuesday because of the four people involved here and how they really fit my style of wrestling. So I'm excited to see that. What I think is going to happen here, of course, is I don't think Strong and Kemp are going to win, but what does that mean then if they lose? Are they going to just defer and come to an agreement with the Creed brothers? Are they going to attack them and kind of kick themselves out of Diamond Mine? I don't know what's going to happen. So to me, the most intriguing aspect, because we know the match is going to be hard-hitting, suplexes, backbreakers, etc. But what happens after the match to the losing team?
All right. So with, I guess, with this, because, yeah, I haven't actually given my thoughts on this yet. The match itself was okay. The Twin Magic thing that you brought up with, you know, them kind of not selling the moves was certainly something I noticed as well. It's certainly a big pet peeve of mine when you just kind of don't sell some big offense, but whatever, is what it is, I guess. Yeah, the match itself, it was a six-man tag. It was on the better side of okay. I'm not a huge fan of six-man tags. This match was a little chaotic, but, you know, I think certainly passable. It was really just, as you said, it was a setup for the implosion of Diamond Mine. One thing I do want to throw in is, one thing with the Dyad Wrestling, one thing that, man, once you see it, you can't unsee it, is just how often they are adjusting their attire, their hoods,
the
robes.
The hood. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's really noticeable. It's got to be super uncomfortable to wrestle in those things.
And hot.
Very hot, very cumbersome. You know, I have no idea what the air conditioning's like inside the performance center there, but man, I hope it's nice and crispy in there because man, it those things don't look like they breathe well. Maybe they do. I don't know, but
Tom,
man,
where's your on-site report at?
I know, right? God, I miss you. It's been like months since I've done a podcast with you at this point. So that's something that I wanted to kind of point out is like, I just don't like the attire. I like it for backstage. You know, it's kind of ominous and stuff for backstage or vignettes or video packages, or whatever. But in the ring, I feel like they could do something better, you know, maybe take the robes off, but still have some sort of a mask, you know, not necessarily like a cane type of a mask, but still something that covers their entire face. Maybe slapjack, something that looked like a cutout paper plate. I don't know. Please,
I think
the issue with that
is it probably will give away who's actually under the mask a lot easier than what they're doing now.
Potentially, yeah, potentially, which is probably what they're doing. But, I don't know. I feel like there's still a better way of doing it that it doesn't look quite as goofy because it really just looks goofy. It doesn't look as intimidating. It feels like there's just a couple people in hoods and bathrobes, wrestling around out there. And then you've got Joe Gacy, the faux priest. So it's weird, but, there's not a whole heck of a lot more I've got to say about this and we haven't already talked about. So, I guess we can move on to the next. Let's talk about, we talked about Nikita Lyons and Rose. We talked a little bit about Sangha and Zion Quinn. We didn't really touch on the match, though. But actually, I guess we did a little bit. Do you have anything to add to Zion and Quinn and Sangha? I don't think I do.
The one thing I do have to add is I tweeted, did Sangha study a certain dumbass mayor's character for his lead-in to the chokeslam? Because it looked eerily similar to that lead-in for the chokeslam, how he held his hands back and trolled his fingers before he grasped the neck of Zion Quinn. So that's the only thing I had to add. So next time he does a chokeslam, just watch out for that.
I have no idea who you're talking about. That person
Kane.
Said to me.
Oh,
no, I know.
Exactly.
I know exactly
oh,
who you're
right,
talking
right,
about.
Right.
That person.
So
said
I know he's one of your favorites. That's why I know it hits a bit hard.
Yeah, yeah. Kane was one of my favorites, and I can't get behind Kane anymore because of the man behind the mask. But that's,
well, did you catch that shot, or am I just making?
Oh no, I totally caught it. So yeah, it's not not something that you're making up anyway. Cool. So yeah, that's Zion Quinn and Sangha. We touched on that quite a bit already. So let's talk about Katana Chance, Caden Carter versus Roxanne Perez and Cora Jade. As we discussed a little bit ago, they did win this. They, as in Cora Jade and Roxanne Perez, won this match, determining who the number one contender for the NXT Women's Tag Team Championships are. So they will be facing Toxic Attraction next Tuesday at the Great American Bash. This match is also kind of weird for me. It wasn't necessarily a bad match per se, but Katana Chance and Caden Carter have mostly been leaning face. The past couple of weeks, they started sort of doing some heelish things. I think it was mostly their attitude more than anything. Tonight they kind of had almost like a full blown heel turn backstage, where they threw a really, both of them had very poorly acted temper tantrums. Although Katana Chance, Casey Catanzaro, yours was much worse. Your acting was much worse. I gotta say, that was bad. You step it up. They've been leaning a little bit more heel here, but there really wasn't like a definitive heel turn before this match started. So it almost kind of felt like face versus face, but you still saw some shades of a heel heel tag team between, you know, a heel tag team with Chance and Carter. So I don't know. It was just a little weird for me to get into because I wasn't quite sure. I mean, I knew Cora Jade and Perez were playing faces, but I wasn't quite entirely sure if we're still going to be having, you know, like a face Carter and Chance, or if they would eventually go heel, which it looks like they did early, you know, later in the night. But at least for the match itself, it was a little bit confusing and tough to get into for me because of that. This was probably the right call to put it, you know, to give the number one contendership to Cora Jade and Roxanne Perez. They've been really pushing them both as not just singles competitors, but as a tag team as well. So it kind of makes sense to push them. You know, Caden Carter and Katana Chance, they've been around for a while. I think they're certainly deserving of the spot, but it doesn't really make sense for them to get that spot where they've already had it a couple times at this point. I don't think it's fair for them to get that spot where Cora Jade and Roxanne Perez, they're the ones that are kind of up and coming. The spotlight's more on them. And so I think putting them in the spot really makes the most sense for not really for everybody involved. The other strange thing about this is the fact that this match did not come about because of Roxanne Perez's win in the breakout tournament, where she won a contract for a title shot. Doesn't specify which, but a title shot. It looked like that's the way they were going to be going. It looked like that was the story they were telling, was she was going to cash in that shot for a tag team title shot rather than a shot at Mandy Rose's title. It was confirmed tonight that no, that's not the case. Kelly Bruce and I don't remember them talking about it last week at all, talking about them not having to cash in that title or that contract for a title shot, where they basically just needed to win this match to become the number one contenders instead. So Roxanne Perez still has her, it's not really a money in the bank, but it's essentially a money in the bank briefcase, where she could basically challenge Mandy Rose still at any time. Nikita Lyons, I guess, if Nikita Lyons ends up winning the title somehow. So that is something that's still in the back pocket of Perez. Anything you want to add on this match, Bruce?
At least they clarified that this was not for her breakout tournament shot, but still bad on that for taking so long to clarify for us, because it's been weeks since she's won that. And every indication kept, even from how the promos are being performed by Roxanne Perez and by Mandy Rose up until tonight, seemed to indicate that she would be using this tag team championship match as her championship opportunity. But then that wouldn't make sense if they also having her go in a number one contenders match. So now we know it's clarified. To the backstage segment with Carter and Chance, Tatum Paxley just keeps growing on me. I'm not high on her, but I've been higher on her than other people that came in with her, kind of her class, like Kiana James or Sloan Jacobs, who we haven't seen in weeks as well. And I think tonight she, you know, not a great actor either, but she reacted, I think, as many of us would just react, like, are y'all serious right now? Okay, whatever. So ever since she made her challenges to both Ivy Nile and then Natalya when Natalya came to NXT, people might not remember that Natalya's first match back in NXT was against Tatum Paxley. I feel like there's something there. I'm not sure how much of potential she has, but there's something at least there in my eyes. And I feel like more so than the other people, especially like Kiana James, right? Her character is much more grounded. And it's not so gimmicky. Like, you know, I came up with all the analytics and the data, and I was still shocked that I beat, that I won my match tonight against Indy Hartwell, that kind of thing, right? So, for me, good for Paxley. I'm glad the title shot is still there, and it seems like it is for the NXT Women's Championship when that does happen. Unlike the Money in the Bank, though, I think it has to be, be cast in for a match that will be scheduled and not something that can happen like right after a match or during a match. So at least there's that.
That's a good point.
So I'm assuming that she'll have to go to, I guess an Adam Pearce like character. I don't even know if there's anyone like that at NXT right now.
I think she's probably just going to say, I'm cashing this in or something.
Think it's simple, like, I've spoken with WWE management, and I'm...
Yeah, I mean, heck, she could even say Adam Pearce. Adam Pearce doesn't need to show up, but she could say she called him or something, you know?
Yeah, or they could do a pre-recorded segment or something, like a Zoom, where they had a Zoom meeting or something, and he confirmed the news, or she's asked for something like that. So I think, a good thing, because then it'll help build anticipation for the match. I hope it's not one of those things where it's, I'm going to challenge you next week. I hope they save it for whatever the SummerSlam pay-per-view or PLE is going to be for NXT.
Yeah, no, I agree. I hope they do save it for that, and it's not just something they throw on a random Tuesday. If it is a random Tuesday, then, you know, I hope it's not actually a random Tuesday, and it is a premium live event like Great American Bash, you know, is technically taking up the TV time slot, but, you know, they're kind of booking it like a PLE, as they've done, you know, many times in the past, obviously. Cool. So that's kind of that there. Let's talk a little bit. You brought up Kiana James, so we can talk a little bit about Indi Hartwell versus Kiana James. A little bit of a short match here tonight I'm actually drawing a blank. It was Kiana James that went over, correct?
Sorry, what was that?
I said, I'm drawing a blank. It was Kiana James that went over, correct?
Yeah, she put her foot on the rope, and really it was just her toe touching
that's
the rope.
Right.
So
that's
it would
right.
Been, as Kelly wrote in his report, it would have been more effective had she not done that.
Yes. Yeah. So. That's absolutely right. Now that you say that, I do remember the finish there where Kiana James did use the bottom ropes to get some leverage, I guess. As Bruce just said, it was literally just her toes on the rope, so it's not like she really got a whole heck of a lot more leverage, but... You know, kayfabe, she did, because her feet were touching the ropes. So this match was kind of interesting in a way, because Indi Hartwell has really had – she's had a very interesting 2022. I think she still started the year as part of the Way. I can't remember exactly when the Way went away. But she was part of the Way. She had a husband. Now everybody – and then she had a best friend – with Persia Parada. Now, everybody that she has been associated with has either gone up to the main roster, like Austin Theory, or is no longer part of the company, like the Garganos and Persia Parada. So, Dexter Lumis, for that matter. So it's certainly been a strange year for her, and they've been talking about it a lot on TV, which is kind of what brought this whole thing up with Kiana James. Kiana James basically come on screen anytime Indi Hartwell's on screen, and essentially brought up the fact that she's had a very hard past few months, kind of poking fun at her, and Indi Hartwell was kind of looking to get some retribution here tonight. So I think the fact that this ended in a bit of a dirty finish here obviously means that this isn't the end of the feud between these two. But I think it also means that they're starting to put a little bit more into Kiana James, have a little bit more faith in her, putting her into an actual program with somebody like Indi Hartwell. Indi, you know, she's a good hand in the ring. She's certainly not the best. We've talked about that before on the show. Especially I think for somebody that has been around in NXT for as long as she has. But at the same time, a lot of people like her. She's very charismatic, and she's definitely won over the hearts of people in NXT. So I feel like she's definitely somebody that's a good first opponent for a newcomer like Kiana James. That's kind of what I or at least my two cents on that match. Let's go to the final match of the night it wasn't the last match tonight, but it's the only one we haven't talked about yet. And that is Fabian Aichner, Giovanni Vinci versus Eichmann Jiro. I'll give you guys, if you haven't watched NXT, I'll give you one guess as to who won that match. And I'll tell you, it's not the guy with colorful jackets. Giovanni Vinci went over.
Seth Rollins.
Yeah, right. Actually, I tweeted out earlier in the week. Nobody actually liked the tweet. I was surprised. Like, I wonder if Eichmann Jiro and Seth Rollins have the same tailor, you know? I mean... Who knows? I doubt it. I think Seth Rollins is kind of cooler, but, you know.
Seth looked like sherbet ice cream last night.
He kind of did. That was a weird – and if you noticed, too, there was a – I think it was when he was backstage with John Cena. You could tell that there was a drawstring on the pants, which just made it seem a little more ridiculous to me. This was exactly what – this match was just a squash match for Giovanni Vinci. I still think it's really weird that they're not – like, they're basically, treating him like he's a brand new competitor on the show. His time as Fabian Aichner as a member of Imperium is just vanished off the face of the planet. He is completely a new person at this point. It's going to be interesting to see if, he winds up as a mainstay, in WWE, if like they eventually address that, or if he just, his start date with WWE was, as Giovanni Vinci. I'm not adverse to them just completely changing somebody and doing something like this. I mean, hell, they did that with Wendy Chu, right? But at least make
they did it with Nikki Cross.
They did it, yeah, Nikki Cross. But at least with Nikki Cross, there was like a
Nikki.
Nikki was
still there.
Nikki was still there, and then they kind of explained the Nikki ASH thing a little bit, but with this, it was just. Here's this new guy that looks exactly like Fabian Aichner. I wouldn't have a problem with that if he didn't look exactly like Fabian Aichner. It's weird. Is what it is. We're used to name changes and things like that, but at least Katana Chance, as stupid of a name as that is, like they're still considering her Casey Catanzaro. Alba Fire, they're still considering her a continuation of Kaylee Ray. But this one, no, it's just a complete new character, which is, I don't know, kind of weird. It's not unprecedented. It's not unheard of. They've done it a million times, but not – it was kind of
boring. There's someone else on the show that we need to discuss who has a new name as well and a new identity.
I missed that. Who's that?
J.D. McDonough.
Oh, yes, that's right. We do have we'll talk about him in a little bit. There's really not a whole heck of a lot that I can say about the match itself. It was exactly what you think it is. Giovanni Vinci looked good. He went over strong, but the crowd did not care. There weren't cheers. There weren't really boos. It was just kind of apathy towards his win, which I don't think is a good thing for Giovanni Vinci. You don't want apathy. You want them to care about you. So I'm kind of wondering if, maybe we see him do something with Tony D'Angelo now that Tony D'Angelo apparently killed off one of his henchmen in Two Dimes, which that's also something we haven't talked about yet. But apparently there was a murder on this show, guys. hold the presses. There was a murder. Anything to add on Giovanni Vinci and Ike Manjiro?
Eichner, Vinci, that man's powerbomb is nasty. Very
it's,
nasty.
It is absolutely phenomenal. I'm not gonna lie. It's one of the best in the business.
Yeah, it's really it's something to see because it's not like he's Kevin Nash size or stocky like Batista or anything like that. He looks more like he's my height. I'm 5'8". I know he's not that short, but he's not a 6'8" kind of dude.
It almost reminds me a bit of Cesaro, or now back to being Claudio.
Claudio's much taller.
Well, right, but at the same time, he doesn't look like he should be as strong as he is, and that's kind of what I was trying to get at. It's same thing with him. It's like he's got the strength, but he doesn't look like he has that much strength.
Yeah, no, it's true. I feel like what they're trying to do with him is kind of have like an Italian playboy version of Tyler Breeze from back in the day. He's not as outwardly conceited, but he's definitely a narcissist. So there's that. The match, it's fine. My question is, what are their short-term and long-term goals with Vinci as a character? Is he just going to be on NXT for a short stay to kind of build him up and move him to Raw or SmackDown? Probably Raw, because moving him to SmackDown would be weird with Kaiser and Gunther there. Or is there something more in the line? Like, is he going to challenge Carmelo Hayes for the North American Championship? Because I'm pretty sure he's going to win next week. Is he going to be a challenger for Braun Breaker? I'm at this rate, I mean, honestly, he could go for either after next week, depending on the two victors, and I'm assuming it'll be the champions retaining. He could really go either way, and I don't think people would be very – I don't think I would criticize the booking decision that much, because right now in the men's division, there aren't too many people who are just on streaks and have a certain presence to them, and he could be one of them. There's that. When it comes to – did you want to talk about what was it? The family angle, and do you want or JD McDonough right now, or do you want to hold off?
Actually, yeah, feel free if you want to discuss either or you know, the D'Angelo murder angle or JD McDonough. Feel free. I feel like they're both quick enough to jam in here.
Yeah. So quickly on McDonough, when he did his little thing today, little vignette, and he said, I'm the necessary evil for that WWE, or that NXT 2.0 needs. And I was like, ooh, maybe they wanted to rethink that, because that might get a little closer to home than you're expecting there. If you don't know, look up the stuff from Outside the Ring with JD McDonagh, the former Jordan Devlin, because there are some things. So there's that. And then when it comes to the family, like, how many more murders are we gonna have in NXT? At least they weren't in the Full Sail parking lot, which is like the most dangerous, felonious place in all of professional wrestling. But this was still hilarious to me, because they didn't even try and be euphemistic about it. They talk about playing with the fishes, but obviously we know when you throw something in, and we know what's going on here. But I just want to bring up some of the tweets that I got in response to me talking about Two Dimes being murdered, and I said it's going to be real awkward when he shows up in a year. Someone said that it's a witness protection storyline, and I said he's going to show up in a year like, for those of you who like My Hero Academia, he's going to show up in a year like Best Genius did. Another person said that it's actually no body, so no murder. I was like, oh, smart. But then another one said that body's actually Two Dimes' brother, Nickel. So yeah, a little bit of commentary about Two Dimes being quote unquote murdered today.
Oh, Nickel, that just tickled me a little bit. That's fantastic. Yeah, man. So this segment with the family was weird. I'm not even sure who was it that called him. Was that Santos that called him?
It was Santos making fun of him. Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought, but I couldn't really tell. Like the voice. I mean, even though he's got a distinctive voice, you know, because they added like a sound effect to make it seem like it was a cell phone, it was hard for me to pick up. I thought it was Santos Escobar, but yeah,
mocking
Santos Escobar
about not being the North American champion.
Exactly. So yeah, it was just a weird segment all around. I mean, I thought it was. It's funny because there's part of me that actually kind of enjoyed the segment for the entertainment value. I mean, it was very well produced. There were some great camera angles and stuff. And it kind of fits the Tony D'Angelo character. Like, okay, you're going to try and take over my empire. Well, now you're going to be sleeping with the fishes. Like it makes sense for the character, but it's a murder in a show that's supposed to be somewhat loosely based in reality, like, or at least an attempted murder. Right. I don't know. Like it just feels, Sean, who was on with us a little while back, Sean Covington, him and I were talking, he was talking with both of us actually on Twitter, and you're kind of saying the same thing, like, you know, or sorry, I said the same thing to both of you guys. And he comes back, he's like, oh, I'm from Chicago, no body, no murder. I think that might have actually been what you were talking about too a little bit ago. Mm-hmm. It's weird. It was weird. Like there's part of me that liked the segment, but there's also part of me that goes, what the hell was that? You know? So I'm kind of torn on it. I think I'm more in the camp of what the hell was that, but you know, I did find some enjoyment out of it. As far as JD McDonagh stuff, I'm kind of intrigued by it. It almost feels like he's trying to be a cross between Giovanni Da Vinci, Giovanni Vinci And then LA Knight is like what I'm kind of getting here. So I don't know. We'll see. I'm curious to see what the actual character is going to be when he debuts. But it's also hard for me to try and get vested in him because of, you know, the things that came out in the past. You know, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. I'm going to try and just judge the wrestling and the wrestling stuff and try to keep the personal stuff out of my head. But, you know, it's certainly there. That's really all I get to say about those two things here. So let's go for broke and we'll try and get home pretty quick. Before we touch on some of the other things that happened, let's go to back to the mailbag and hit our email from Kevin Catani. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you all well. I saw a picture earlier on Twitter today of Carmelo Hayes and Bron Breakker sitting in a locker room together. Are these guys the future? How do you all assess their likelihood of carrying the main roster in 2 to 5 years? Will they both be there? Will one flake out? Will both fizzle? What do you think? Thanks, as always. Go VIP and listen to NXT8YB. Office hours are now over. The professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. And yes, I agree with you, Bruce. Yes, they are certainly the future of the company as far as I'm concerned. Bron Breakker, you know, just not only just with his lineage, but he's also, I mean, he's kind of got the Roman Reigns push already in NXT. You know, he right out of the gate, as soon as NXT 2.0 debuted, you knew he was the guy. And I feel like out of everybody that was in the NXT 2.0 class back then, he was the guy. He was the only one that really kind of ticked all of the boxes, at least in, you know, enough of a way to carry a show as a champion. You know, he's certainly got the charisma. He's certainly got the in-ring acumen, and he certainly has got the look to be a champion. And, you know, the family lineage certainly is in his favor as well. So I think Bron Breakker is going to be around for a while, as long as he keeps his nose clean, obviously. Same thing with Carmelo Hayes. Hayes is like severe, like I can't begin to describe how much Carmelo Hayes has impressed me since the breakout tournament that he debuted in last summer. Because, you know, as I've talked about a million times on the show, he seemed like a creative character, creator wrestler type of a deal to me. I liked his in-ring ability, but like, he just seems super generic. Now he is the furthest thing from generic on the show. He's one of the reasons you tune into NXT is to see Carmelo Hayes and in turn kind of Trick Williams as well, you know, kind of part of the act, but primarily Carmelo Hayes. He's phenomenal in the ring. He's phenomenal on the mic. He has the look. He's got everything you need to be a solid, especially a heel, a solid, solid heel. So absolutely, I think both of them will be there for the long term, 2 to 5 years down the road. I certainly see them there on the main roster and hopefully making a difference. I think it would be maybe a major shame. Bron Breakker, I think, is going to go to the main roster, and because of his lineage and his push, he's probably going to do just fine. Carmelo Hayes, I hope when he goes to main roster, he'll be just fine. But it's also the type of act where I could see them, you know, kind of not, I don't say not knowing what to do with it, but almost not knowing what to do with it and kind of killing it when it hits the main roster. I really hope that does not happen. I hope I am wrong. But I would also not be surprised if that happened. So with all of that, Bruce, on this email, as well as any of the segments that Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams were in, one of those segments, or actually both of the segments that they were involved in, the first one, Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams are backstage with Grayson Waller, who kind of comes out of nowhere and asks for an autograph for I forget exactly for who it was one of his, you know, for a friend or somebody, something like that. But he asked them for a bunch of autographs, and Carmelo Hayes, oh yeah, sure, no problem, signs everything. And even says, you know, as Grayson Waller's walking away, oh man, yeah, that's a good guy. I like that guy. He's good people or something.
He's a trustworthy guy.
He's a trustworthy guy. Yeah. And then of course, later on in the night, Mackenzie Mitchell goes to interview Carmelo Hayes, and Carmelo Hayes, she basically asks him like what he thinks about his NXT North American title match against Grayson Waller coming up with Great American Bash. And Carmelo Hayes looks at her like she's got three heads. Like, wait, what are you talking about? I never signed anything. And that's when he put two and two together that he did sign something. The autograph that he signed, the things that he signed, apparently he was dumb enough to sign a contract without knowing. So Grayson Waller kind of weaseled his way into a North American title shot. I thought that's a brilliant way of doing it. It does make Carmelo Hayes look kind of stupid because you can't look down and see that you're signing a contract, not a piece of paper or, you know, your own picture or something. But whatever, I still think it was kind of a clever way of doing it. And it certainly paints Grayson Waller as that, like, kind of intelligent heel that, you know, he'll do anything to win, but he'll do it in a sneaky way. So I kind of like that. I think it was kind of a good way to get to that match. So Bruce, on anything revolving around Trick Williams, which I guess also would include the Wesley thing. I guess I'll bring that up later, but anything that's revolving around Trick Williams, Carmelo Hayes, and Kevin Catani's email.
So to the email first, if it was my company, I would Carmelo Hayes out of the two, Carmelo Hayes would be my number one. But being Vince's company, I'm fairly certain that they have higher plans and hopes for Bron Breakker, which is fine. I do think Hayes is the better overall talent with the higher potential. But then it could also be a situation where he's closer to his potential in their eyes than Bron Breakker. So there's more for him so there's more to work with Breakker moving forward. I think they'll be fine. The confidence that Carmelo Hayes in his character and his presentation and everything, it just, you don't see that in a lot of characters, even the ones who do gain some success. I would even say that Bron Breakker doesn't have that sort of confidence. I think it shows when he starts reverting to the yelling and the pacing a lot, because whenever he does that, he doesn't really say anything. He just kind of repeats empty tropes. And so for me, I would stick with, you know, Hayes would be the person that I go with, but I don't think either of them are going to have issues once they make the main roster, aside from Vince pegging people who are Black or Asian or Latino into certain kinds of character roles. Aside from that, they should be fine. So I will defend Hayes a little bit in that backstage segment, because it wasn't like the contract was the first thing that Waller presented to him. He had the contract. He hadn't signed the contract after he had signed a ball, a shirt, and several pictures, and he hid the contract under the pictures and just said, don't forget to sign that for my little cousin or whatever it might be. And, you know, I've never been famous enough to have an autograph session, but I assume that people who have them just get into a mode where they just sign whatever comes across their way, and that could be Carmelo Hayes here. And it does present Waller as a conniving, intelligent heel. Instead of earning your way, they're working through matches, because he's, I think, aside from I can picture him in my head hitting his finisher on someone last week. I can't remember who. Aside from that, he's kind of been on the losing end a lot of things, so it works in his favor there to do that. My only question here for Waller is, how the hell did he get a contract for the North American Championship to just have and go about without you know, isn't that something that should be kept only with management? So there's that aspect, but that's me thinking too hard. This should also be a great match next week. Waller is someone I've also been high on, and I think that when you're looking at the men's division, if you're going to rank the people in the men's division by who is going to do well on Raw or SmackDown, when you definitely have Breakker and Hayes at the top, Waller is not too far behind them.
I would agree. I think Waller is, I wouldn't say he's that far behind him at all. He might have a little bit of polishing to do, but I think if they were to just pluck him right out right now and put him on the main roster, he would flourish. I strongly believe that he is more than impressed me with his character work, especially, you know, when he first debuted as, you know, kind of like a white meat baby face type of deal, like it didn't click with me, but once he turned heel, oh man, that's when he settled into his groove. And I think if they plucked him out right now, he'd be all set up there. All right. So there are a few more segments that we have not talked about. But I think I'm going to try and wrap things up unless there's anything else that you specifically want to talk about, Bruce.
Quickly, Lash Legend was hilarious in her segment tonight, kicking away the medical staff when they were trying to update on Alba Fire. So I thought that was fun. Wesley, again.
Oh, Wesley, yes, yes.
Continues to have promo after great promo after great promo. This is the type of wrestler who we've known is inside of him, but was just held back by the MSK gimmick and the team. I strapped the rocket to this man, put him in title matches, let him be champion. He might be small for Vince when come Raw or SmackDown, but this man, so I'm not equating him to the same person. All right, let me make that clear. Okay. He is not Tanahashi. But what Lee does have and does possess that Tanahashi possesses more than almost anybody since Bret Hart, I think, is being able to be a babyface that wins the fans over no matter how they thought of you going into the match. So at Forbidden Door on Sunday against Jon Moxley, it was a very split crowd when the match began. About 15 minutes into it, the whole crowd turned and started cheering for Tanahashi and not for Moxley. And so I think Wesley possesses that ability as a babyface as well. Part of it has to do with the size, of course, but he sells like no other. When he took that chokeslam from Sangha a few weeks ago and crumpled him, it was
fantastic.
It was amazing. I hurt watching that bump. So I think Wesley has that type of babyface ability, which a lot of times means he won't be the champion. He'll be in the run to the championship. Kind of reminds me of Sami Zayn in NXT. Or if he does become champion, it'll be the real quick thing. And that's fine. I think that he continues to just show passion and layers and relatability and justifications in his promos since he's come back as a singles wrestler and his vignettes.
I think, I don't think it's a perfect comparison, but I think if they were to continue to get behind Wesley and continue to book him kind of the way they're booking him, I think they could potentially have like another RVD on their hands. It's part of it, I think, is kind of like the stoner type thing that, you know, we got with MSK. Granted, he's gotten a lot. He's gotten away from that, you know, since going out on his own. But, you know, I think that's still kind of part of his character and it could kind of sort of come back. But you know, just kind of equating it to, you know, his size, the same kind of like you know, high flying acrobatic moves that you know, RVD did. Granted, you know, I think the stuff that, you know, we see kind of normally now out of a lot of the talents even more spectacular than we saw at RVD. But I think it kind of, the comparison kind of holds true because of the size, because of the style, and also just kind of a non-conventional wrestler for Vince McMahon. You know, RVD is, you know, he wasn't somebody that, you know, Vince really had a whole heck of a lot of faith in. Granted, once he did finally put the faith in him, RVD screwed it up, him and Sabu, but you know, that is what it is. So I don't know, that's kind of like my thought with him. I really like what they're doing with him. He's become one of my favorite parts of NXT, honestly, and I never thought I'd say that. MSK did nothing for me, but Wesley on his own as a singles competitor with the way they're booking him right now, I'm on board. I'm on board 100%, and I think he's doing some great stuff. The promo tonight was fantastic. It was from the heart. It did not seem really, you know, not even just the promo tonight, but like, you know, his in-ring promo last week, you know, he started tearing up and things like that. He speaks from the heart with what he's given, you know, with the lines he's given or the bullet points he's given or whatever. He speaks from the heart and everything seems like it's personal to him. And that, I think, is one of the best ways he's going to get over. He doesn't come across like, I'm going to go back to Katana Chance and her awful acting tonight, you know. You watch that and you really, I don't even remember what the heck they were talking about. All I remember is the fact that her acting was horrible. Whereas, you know, Wesley, I do remember what he was talking about because he spoke with conviction and it didn't take me out of the moment. So I think they've got something there with Wesley.
And it made sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So with that, that's going to bring us to the end of our show tonight, guys. Again, I'm Nate Lindberg, and you can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the NXT hits and misses, which I do have up on pwtorch.com for you guys if you'd like to check it out. And also, too, I do have a second project I work on that's over on YouTube, Deej Time, D-E-G-E-T-I-M-E, where we take a therapeutic look at role-playing games. Check that out if you're interested in RPGs or, you know, some self-care. Bruce, who are you?
I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. I cover NXT every other Tuesday moving forward with the live reports. So next Tuesday for the Great American Bash, I'll be covering the show with my live report. And then on, don't forget, this Sunday, Nate and I will be back on Wrestling Night in America to cover Money in the Bank. So call in or email. If you're listening to here or if you're listening on here, do it to the PWT Talks or PWTorchNXT@gmail.com. address, because that's the one we've always have access to, and that way we won't be able to skip any emails. On Sunday, or a couple of days, 2 days ago, we didn't have any emails because we didn't have access to Greg's mailbag. So just throwing that out there. So catch us again on Sunday after, right after Money in the Bank, probably about 5 or 10 minutes after the show is off.
Absolutely. We'll be here. You can either email us, like he just said, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. I'm going to try and get Greg to forward anything over to our mailbox if he can. But, if you do want to mail in, email us there, because that'll be sure to get to us. Or you could call in at the same number you call into this show, 515-605-9345. Press 1, which will alert me on the switchboard that you want to talk. And I'll bring you on the show. So with that, we'll see you guys for Wrestling Night in America. Take care.